Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I denne episoden av ukens vintips har vi forflyttet oss til Sommerro, et hotell som har blitt ombygget til et av de flotteste I landet. Og på besøk I studio har vi besøk av en legende, en mann som har vært svaret på spansk vinindustri I mange herrens tiår. Han har alltid vært fremme når det gjelder å gjøre Spania større, men ikke minst også sitt eget merke. Denne mannen her en legende, ikke helt uten grunn, for at han har også gjort nå, de siste 40 årene, har han tatt vare på gamle spanske druesorter. Og vi skal ha oss en prat med Miguel Torres, som en mann som jeg har kjent og truffet mange ganger, men endelig skal jeg få stille han mange gode spørsmål. Så denne episoden her, den vel verdt å få med seg. Welcome, Miguel.
Thank you, Svein. I'm very glad to be in Norway again.
Again, you have been there 80 times.
Well, not 80, but a lot of times since 1971, probably, yes.
Yes. The first visit you have was with Stig Lundberg in the August of 1971.
You remember that, huh?
We checked, yes. So at that time, Torres was coming in as one of the first brands from Spain.
That's right.
And you have the big success with the Gran Coronas and Coronas.
Right.
For many, many decades.
Yes.
But Torres have moved on every year, every decade, and we're going to have a talk about what's happening in the future.
Okay.
But first of all, we're going to talk a little bit about what Torres is today. Torres, your son and your daughter is now the fifth generation of Torres. You have been the president of Torres, but many who have gone to president, you are still working a lot. You are traveling all over the world. And you are very upset, I will say, with the legacy of Torres, what will happen in the future.
Yes.
And one of the things you have done, who have been, even if I follow you for many, many decades of years, and this with the grapes, I heard about it for 10 years ago, 5 years ago it was more official, but now it's on the table. And please explain for our listeners, what is this new thing or the grape from Spain now who's coming?
Okay, well, you remember that, you know, when I started in the wine business, coming back from France, from Dijon, my idea was, you know, to plant the French and even some German varietals in Catalonia. Because, well, at this time, you know, I thought we could make great wines with it, and there it is, Mas La Plana, that we're going to taste, made with the Cabernet Sauvignon. Later on, of course, we were using a lot of the Spanish grapes as well. And recently, since 40 years ago, we started to try to recuperate the old Catalan vines that disappear with phylloxera. When I was studying in a sabbatic year in Montpellier, a professor told me, Monsieur Bubals, Miguel, why don't you try to make it up, the old Catalan grapes? Because a vine never disappears, even if it's not anymore planted, but it's somewhere. And, we had, you know, many small ads in the Catalan newspapers, local Catalan newspapers, and we got answers. People call and say, well, I have in my vineyard a vine that I don't know what it is. Then we went there and, a few times, it was interesting. And then, you know, we could recuperate this varietal. We could clean it up of the virus they have and then reproduce it. And there we are, you know, today you are going to taste one of these old Catalans. And for us, you know, it's like recuperating our history, our heritage. So it's very interesting, very exciting.
But when you are going in that project on the side, because you are building an own industry or own business on Cabernet Sauvignon, on the normal Spanish grape as we know it, and you're building a brand. So this was a side project that you are keeping going on, because it's not fixed on a one day to introduce new grapes, even if it's been there all the time. You have to find out. Could you tell a bit how difficult it is from... or timing it would be from you find a grape from a farmer in Spain outside Barcelona, and he said, okay, I found a grape, and this is an exciting grape. How long did it take before it is an official grape? Or,
well, I reckon no less than 10 years, because first, well, normally these old vines, they have virus. You have to clean them up in a special laboratory. Then you have to take a small cell from the apex, from the upper part of the vine, and then put this in a special tube and reproduce it, and again in a different tube until you really get clean of the virus, rid of the virus. And then this goes in the greenhouse for planting, and it takes, well, 3-4 years. And finally, you can go and plant it in the soil, in normal soil in a vineyard. So it's almost 10 years.
Yeah. But why did you, you know, today is... it's a good thing with the climate, but 40 years ago, no one talked about the climate and what it could change. So was this project was going on just to preserve it for some reason, or it was, you know, why do you make this decision to include this in your wines today, the older wines?
Mm-hmm. Well, ideally, as I told you, initially it was just to recuperate these Catalan grapes, find out what they were like, or what kind of wine they were making. Later on, you know, with the arrival of the warming, then we realized, you know, that some of these Catalans, old Catalans, they could, ripen later on. And that's interesting, because today, you know, with more heat, the trend is that the harvest is advanced, and this is no good for the quality. So this, you know, can be a solution for the future.
Mm. I think it is the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Because many times when I taste, and I taste a lot of wines throughout the year, it's a lot of talk about the climate and what's going to happen. Will Burgundy disappear because of climate, because of tree? But I think use of new grapes, good techniques, and a little bit in a high attitude of wines, you will have wines who is a little bit different in taste, what we're used to, but it will come up new. And this is project you have been one of the few in the world who have done it. Yeah. You're not the only one who have found old grapes and fixed it or take it up to the commercial level. But do you think, because I heard last time I was in Spain, that you also is giving this out for free. It's not your grapes. Could you tell me a little bit about why that decision came?
Well, you know, my son idea, he's a manager, and he thought that it's better to get other, you know, other vignerons, other farmers to plant this grape, because it belongs to Catalonia. It's not, hasn't to be a monopoly of Torres. So there were very few are planting them, but we are prepared to give them away. Mm. Actually, we share with the farmers, with the wineries in Spain, all the information. Sometimes we produce new technologies, for example, to recuperate the CO2 from the fermentation, something we designed for the first time 4 years ago, and we gave this technology to other wineries. That's the policy.
But for your opinion, who have followed Spain for many, many years, do Spain need a new direction if they're going to keep up with quality?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. We have to adapt. And for us, we are fortunate because we have the Pyrenees close. And since 12 years ago, we've been planting vines at an altitude of 1,000 meters. And then, you know, we have a cooler climate. And today, I can tell you the best Sauvignon Blanc in the company, even the best, Chardonnays are already produced up there.
So for our listeners, Torres, make his breakthrough to the international world to launch Mastellaplana in 1979. That's the old story. Yeah. But will Mastellaplana be a different wine in 20 years than today because of the climate?
Well, we will have to adapt, you know. I think if we find out that another vineyard, you know, different than Massa La Plana, can make better wine, for me and for us, quality, we don't compromise, you know. Mm. So we can explain that maybe we have to switch a little bit for altitude or whatever. Mm. It has to be, you know, a top wine always.
But you're going to still live in your house in the vineyards of Massa La Plana?
Yes. Okay. I hope so.
Maybe you should build a new house. Uh-huh. But Massa La Plana have also marked tourists for the international, and you have talked about this many, many times. But let us go back to 1979 and the history of tourists. When you approached the tastings at that time, and what happened with tourists as a brand, because you were taking over from your father and you have many good ideas when you're coming in, but it was not easy. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit about how tourists have been the brand it is today, but also the family company? Because you are one of the companies who is family owned, one of the largest, and you are present in the United States, in Chile. Mm-hmm. You have been to China?
Yes, yeah. We're still in China for commercial purpose.
Yeah.
But the vineyard didn't work, no.
Yeah. Thank God for that today. But could you tell me a little bit of the story of this? Because everything happened in your time.
Well, you know, if we focus on the history of Massa La Plana, I remember when I planted Cabernet Sauvignon very early after I returned from Dijon, you know, a small plot near Villafranca. And 3 years after already, I saw that could make a good wine. Jean Leon, my friend also, had planted Cabernet, and I tested the first wines, and I said, well, that's what we need. So when we bought the estate of Massa La Plana in the 60s, then I planted immediately Cabernet Sauvignon. And that's why we were able, the first harvest, 1970, with very young vines, to produce the first Massa La Plana with, 60% or 70% Cabernet Sauvignon. And amazingly enough, in this tasting in Paris by Gaume Millau, with a French jury, not a Spanish jury, French jury, they prefer our wine to Chateau Latour and Chateau Lagos Trintadon and many other great Bordeaux, you know. It was fantastic.
That evening you have that prize of your wine, it was a big party?
Not really, you know.
No.
Not really the first evening, because we didn't realize the importance of that. But then, you know, on the days following, we started to have telephone calls, you know, from our reporters and journalists, whatever, from Germany, from England. Hey, Miguel, what have you done? This is fantastic. And then we realized that was going to really place Massa La Plana and Spanish wines, you know, in a much higher stage. Mm. So, and then I think we did celebrate.
Yeah. So, but what is the most common misunderstanding of Massa La Plana? Because just for listeners, Massa La Plana is a brand who keep the price low to the quality. The wines are old, concentration, and today, maybe the latest 15 years for me, the Massa La Plana have been perfection, like the Sassicaia, like others. You know everything about the vineyards. The Massa La Plana is a state of art, but still, the price have not going up a lot. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Well, this is a discussion we had in the family sometimes, you know. That's why, you know, We have to sell all the other wines. And sometimes, you know, we prefer that, you know, we don't make as much profit with Massa La Plana, provided, you know, I don't know, the restaurant or the specialized shop buys all our wines, right? If we were depending only on Massa La Plana, the price will be twice higher, probably.
Yeah. And here you have a good advice from Miguel Torres himself, that he should sell it for twice his price. But even if it's good quality, this is also a very good seller wine. And after the break, we will have a little taste of it, of the 2018 vintage. And I'm looking forward to it, because that's my first sip of this. And I've tasting a lot of vintage, not so many as you, of course. But let's go back to the Torres brand. Did you think that when the change was coming up and Spain was coming up as a good wine country, that Torres will be what it is today? You know, you have prices, you have, yeah.
Well, I thought, you know, there were many opportunities, because Spanish wines were not up, still not in the, you know, international map. And I knew Spain could produce fantastic wines. There is Vega Sicilia, you know, is a member of our small group, the Primo Family Vine of Europe. I'm saying that because next month we are going to Vega Sicilia.
Ah.
Once a year we visit one winery, and there we are. And Vega Sicilia was already making great wines. And there were also, you know, some great wines being made in Rioja, Marqués de Riscal, and others. So there was a potential. And the problem that is the Spanish, you know, they were a bit, generally speaking, reluctant to go out and present his wines. This was not the case with my father. My father, in 1940, just after the Spanish Civil War, he and my mother were in New York to sell his wines.
1940?
1940. They were already in New York. They started the American market.
Yeah. So your sister, who is now the daughter, is running the Marimar. Mm-hmm. I met her many times and visiting Marimar. That's a beautiful story and very good wines also from Marimar. Are Torres today more a brand than a wine producer?
Well, I think Torres is a brand, is a name, right? It's a name that we are proud to have in all our labels. Sometimes we discuss with my son because, you know, recently he decided, or the family decided, that for the entry-level wines, we wouldn't have the Torres name in it, you know? That was a big discussion.
Yes.
Finally, you know, my son won it.
Yeah.
Because we want to concentrate the Torres name for the, you know, for the restaurants, for the better shops and so forth. Mm.
The reason why I ask is because the latest 15 years, Torres is not only from Barcelona or from Penedès. It's all over all over Spain. So you have been a Spanish heritage. I call it in one of my articles the Spanish icon. And when did the decision to make and also buy different wine and making wine from all over Spain? Mm-hmm. When did this project started to be that you have many from many places from Spain, like Priorat and others? Yeah.
Well, actually, it was 2005. I didn't want to go outside Catalonia. You know, I had the French education, and in France, if you are in Burgundy, you stay in Burgundy. Period. No. But my brother and I think my son already, he was very young then, they insisted that we should move out. So I went to Ribera del Duero and I bought a small cellar for €1 million, I remember, and we started to make wine in Ribera del Duero. Rioja came after, and as much as Rueda, and the last one has been Rías Baixas. We're in Rías Baixas as well. So, and that's it.
A beautiful place. But it's a beautiful place. I've been to all of your wines, wineries.
Have you?
All of, yes.
Hey.
Together with Christophe.
Christophe Brunet?
Yes. No, not Brunet, but Christophe Camuller from the German.
Ah, Camuller, yes.
Just retired from you.
Yes. Press director, yes.
Yes. He was an icon of marketing and,
he
very
was
good
fantastic.
Man. He is very good.
I'm so sorry, he just retired, no?
He shouldn't. But Isabel is taking over, it will be good. But what we have seen is that, and I've heard that it was not so easy for Miguel Torres to buy in other areas, because you have to buy not for yourself. You let lawyers buy the land, because it's not just to buy a land. You have to use maybe 10 years to build up the winery.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, in Priorat, you started very early. And today it's a winery.
Yeah.
But in my first visit to Priorat, it was built slowly.
Exactly.
And from outside, you can see that you are buying land first, and then you're planting wines. And then after a while, the winery is coming up. And then after a while, you can go and visit. So you're building the sales first. Could you tell a little bit about the... why are you doing this? Because many other wineries or wine brands, they are taking everything at... You're a little bit slow. Mm-hmm. I mean, instead of you go to Pratt, you build everything in 3 years, and then it's marketing. But you are making the wines first, mm-hmm. and then you may...
Well, I think, you know, this allowed us to experiment a little bit and see what comes out from these vines or from the other different grapes. And then, you know, when you finally build up a cellar, to build a cellar is very quick, you know, can do it in a year or less. But the vines take a long time, no? So, yes, we prefer to start by the vines, even if sometimes, like is the case in Rías Baixas, the wine was made at another winery, right? And then we were commercializing the wine. And finally, we started the winery, yes.
But are you still a patient man, Miguel Torres?
Not so much, you know, because I'm 81 and I know I have to rush a little bit.
You have to rush. Okay. But your son has also a big impact on your firm, yes, as you have told now. Yes. And you have told me earlier that the discussion with your father was intense. But today you have not that big, intense discussion with your son.
Well, we had discussions, you know. Mm. But I have to say, recently we reached an agreement, you know. And now everything is fine. We work together very, very, you know, very good. And the idea is that, you know, we have to stay together so that in 2 years he becomes the president of the company. 1.5 years, he becomes the president, and then I retire. You know, of course, I'll always be available for dinner. If you come to Spain,
yes,
I'll be very much happy to meet you again.
But do you ever think of what impact yourself personally have done for the Spanish wine industry?
Mm-hmm. Well,
if you think back, and when you are getting out and take prizes, you are treated like a rock star in many places. Do you have any thoughts about this?
I think, in my character, modesty is inherent, you know, it's inside.
Mm.
I think I got this from my mother. But I have to say that last year I got a recognition by the Spanish Minister of Agriculture, and I got the Croix of the Minister of Agriculture, a very impressive medal, you know, that they have to wear in, you know, big parties and so forth, few parties. Mm. But yes, I was very pleased with it, yes.
Because this is something who happened because of what you have done for the Spanish wine industry and also for many wine lovers around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You have opened Spain for many. But if you're looking to the future, and you do, I know you do, what is Spain in 30 years? What is your dream of Spain?
Mm-hmm.
If you take generally of Spain, are Spain more areas? Are Spain more white wine? Are Spain more...
Mm-hmm.
What is Spain as a wine country in 30
well,
years?
Well, in 30 years in Spain, we should be, you know, focusing more in the cooler areas, cooler parts, you know, maybe with more altitude. Maybe we have to make some changes, you know, at viticulture level. And I think Spain has much land ahead. We should be doing much more, especially in the restaurants, you know. I think in that sense, France and even Italy, they are much more ahead of Spain. And this should be, I think we should be, this should be changing. But then we need more Spanish restaurants. That's my little fight now. I was asking money recently in Madrid to the Minister of Agriculture that Spain has to have more restaurants. I mean, I don't know, here in Oslo, how many?
One.
Spanish. How many Italians?
150. Hmm? No, it's many. It's more.
Yes,
yeah.
French, of course.
Yeah.
So that's our disadvantage.
Mm. So you are building restaurants?
No. I hope some others will.
Yes, but it is true. There are one in Oslo who's called Sangria, as you know.
Yes,
and that have been there for many years. But we have in the past 5 or 6, but they all closed. Mm-hmm. In different matters. So, but the Spanish cuisine from the Albuli, from Barcelona as a city, is impacting the food industry also here in Oslo to the Norwegian cuisine.
Yeah.
But it's not Spanish. It's just the basic of learning from Albuli,
okay,
who have been inside. So when they are making a extraordinary good asparagus soup, mm-hmm, it's the technique from Albuli.
Mm-hmm.
So Spanish have just... Not the Spanish restaurant, as a normal view that you're using the word Spanish. But we have, I can mention 4 or 5 chefs in Norway who have Spanish influence.
That's fantastic.
But of course, they have techniques. They mm-hmm. don't have, it's not Spanish. And that's what Albuli did. They took the techniques and delivered, but not as a Spanish thing. So.
I have La Sangria. I had lunch the other day with catering from La Sangria, and it was great. Mm. I still remember, you know, the Spanish omelette, superb.
Yeah. You are in Spain when you are in Sangria.
Yes.
And for our listeners, this is a restaurant just behind the hotel of Radisson Sas. I think it's maybe 40 places, 40, 50 places, but run by a family, very nice family. And he is a big football. He loved Real Madrid, or no? And now we have Katrin on the side here. On the side, we have a secret guest in our podcast. But we have from the Lanzarillas, it's a beautiful place where they have served probably tourists for the latest 30 mm-hmm. years.
Yes.
Something,
yes.
A long, long time. And you have old Nostra Plana, just to. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic here. We're going to go to the commercial, but when you're back, we're going to taste one of the best new wines from Torres, and then we're going to taste the Nostra Plana 2018. So in a minute or two, we are back from the commercial. And now we are back from the commercial, Miguel Torres, and in the commercial, it's about wine cabinets. How many wine cabinets do you have at home at Nostra Plana?
You mean in my own house?
Yeah.
Not many, maybe, I don't know, we have 20 or 25 bottles. Not many because... you know, the winery is so close,
yeah, so you
easily get supply, you know.
Oh, so you still have the key?
I have a key, yes. Yeah. Yes. I don't trust anybody.
No, okay, that's good to hear. But I will mention one word for you, and we have talked about this in the pause of the commercial. But alcohol, what's the background for the word alcohol?
Well, you know, I'm very concerned because of the fact that often when... they talk about alcohol, wine is included in that package. And I think wine should be treated separately. In Spain, we have a foundation since 1993. It's called Foundation for the Wine and Health Stories, Wild Lifestyle. And this foundation, along the years, has been studying, you know, we have now a team of doctors of each specialty, and they produce studies. We sponsor... sometimes, you know, research in several fields. And we can prove that in moderation, when you drink with the food, you know, wine is not to be drank during the day, but with the food, wine can be okay, can be accepted very well, because in our livers, we have an enzyme that it produces slowly on the hour. And since the wine comes with food, then also the assimilation of the alcohol is much, much better. So, yes, wine should be treated separately, and I am concerned about alcohol. I understand in Norway you have monopolies because in the old days there were problems, and here you have to sometimes have a control on the abuse. And I think every winemaker, we are against abuse, no? But I think the monopoly does a very good job in that field.
But the influence of alcohol is also for our listeners important. I hear about that often, that people are not concerned, but the taste of alcohol, you know, when it's 15-16% could be the sensation of alcohol in taste. Mm-hmm. And then many are not appreciating the alcohol levels in a wine, and they're looking for wines with lower alcohol. Mm-hmm. But back to the old grapes you have taken forward to Spain, have the potential alcohol in them, at that grapes, been lower?
Well, it depends, you know. Again, you can play with it. You can have, if you allowed full maturity in the vines, you know, you can have maybe more alcohol. But normally, we like to reach a balance. And as a matter of fact, in the last 5-7 years, all our viticulture techniques go in the sense of delaying the ripening, you know, because we don't want the grapes to be ready in July with all the sugar, but not the quality elements, right? Mm. They have to go until September. And this goes together with the alcohol content, you know. If we can delay the ripening, there is not too much sugar in the wine. In the grapes.
Mm. So you can decide a little bit, but also it depends which quality you want in the wine. Yeah.
And in our company, I think I don't want to see a wine that has more than 14% alcohol. Mm. I become a bit, you know, upset when I see it. Yes.
And your son also?
Yes, we agree.
That's good. That's good to hear. Because alcohol and that level is not good from Spain. So
exactly.
But we are going now to taste the wine. And first, we're going to taste two of the new wines who have been introduced. And could we just start, Miguel, with the white and tell us and have your description of the first wines. The price level is not high. So this is a easy drinking, good wine, good summer wine, food driven, good acidity. But with your words, what do you think of the wine?
Well, this wine is ancestral, no? Ancestral, it means, you know, these ancestral grapes we were talking before. And for us, you know, it's a matter of, we're really proud that we came, we was able to make it up, you know, these old vines, and introduce a different taste. This wine doesn't taste like a Chardonnay, like a Sauvignon Blanc, like a Parellada, whatever. It's different, you know? So it's, well, we are making, you know, this scope of the enology a bit wider, no?
But it's the same thing as Chardonnay when it was first introduced. No one have tasted it. So now everyone is tasting it. This is just a new taste. Right. But for me, this is a matured fruit. Mm-hmm. It have a, the acidity is there, but it's not overpowering like a Sauvignon Blanc. The wine have a kind of a fatness, but still is food driven by the acidity. So this is just beautiful to Norwegian cuisine of like lobster, like natural seafood. Yeah. But still, you can drink it without food, even if you said it's not good, but you can drink it. Because for me, this is just is a wine, it smells good. It's a little bit different if you're used to a Chardonnay or Sauvignon Blanc, but it's still a good quality of wine. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues you have done to many years in Norway, since you have been out now, maybe over 80 years, you don't have the number yourself, but you have worked with the Monopole quite close, even if it's a distance between the Monopole and the tourist natural reasons. You always have come to them with ideas, information, and so on. And can you tell me a little bit more of the reuse of bottles and why this is important?
Well, you know, I'm a little bit concerned that in Scandinavia, the trend is towards, you know, these new packagings, back in the box, Tetra Pak and the can. And of course, we produce the back in the box because, you know, I understand that for the weekend, families like to take, you know, back in the box for the whole weekend. Fine. But then, you know, this goes on and this market seems to be growing. And I wouldn't like, you know, that the glass disappears. Then they say because they estimate that the glass, when it is not, when it's recycled, you know, which means they make pieces out of it and then it's melt and the bottle is made again, the carbon footprint is higher than the back in the box. That's correct. So that's why we are recommending that they reutilize the bottles. Bottles can be reutilized 6 times at least. And then this carbon footprint for the bottle is lower, much lower than the back in the box. Mm. And I don't know, I cannot imagine that you go, I know, you are invited to a friend and you bring a Tetra Pak for dinner, no? I think you will not be welcome, no? Mm.
So in Norway, you are more or less. But of course, a bigger bottle, so a Magnum should be.
Magnum, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
that could be good, yeah. But the use of reuse of bottles have reached a point that in Norway that it's coming. In the basic listings, it will coming up more. But as we see that Norwegian are not used to recycle bottles from the Monopole.
Right.
Only sodas and so on, that's normal, but not wine bottles. Mm-hmm. That should be a demand.
We are talking, you know, for entry-level wines, you know, because ideally, you know, wine like Sangre de Toro, we are prepared to ship it in bulk from Spain and could be bottled here in Oslo.
Yeah.
And then deliver to the Monopoly.
Yeah.
We are doing this, you know, the Monopoly is like Quebec in Canada, you know?
Yeah.
And then you have a much lower carbon footprint.
Okay. But let's go over to the red. The next one is for me, it's my favorite. The white wine is a day-to-day wine. It's easy to drink, very light. But this one here is something new. And the first time I tasted it, it was, wow, this is good.
Mm-hmm.
And on your test of making wines, the vinifying, the different wines from different grapes, do you always make the top end of what you can produce of that grape, or you have several types of wine from the same grape?
Well, you know, we keep learning. At this time, this Catalan grape, which is called Moneu, is 30-40% in this blend. Well, we still don't have enough information. Actually, we are making the maceration with the skins quite short, because the Moneu after 7 days gives to the wine too much tannin. So we have to be careful, you know, and that's why, you know, there is also some Garnacha in the blend as well.
But this is a dark fruit driven. It have tannins, but it's a little bit matured tannins. The acidity on this vintage is a little bit lower than the last vintage I tasted. But still, this is a day-to-day wine, but also with the extra of Taurus.
Right.
And of my opinion, Taurus always deliver over the top of quality to compare to price. And that's one of the key issues to follow Taurus, is because I don't think the price discussion you have reached the level of quality in the market, but also then also towards in each kind of factors from the easy drinking wines, not so expensive wines to more expensive, they are good bargains, also for storage. We are now reaching the time we have, but we will have a little bit sip of the 2018 vintage of Marcel Plana. What is your personal relationship when you live in the vineyards of Marcel Plana and have the key to winery? Is easy to get addicted to Marcel Plana, or it is just an old friend who has been, as I mentioned, this is, you know, everything of Marcel Plana. You know every plot, you know every part of this wine. Do you have any, could it be better? Could it be done differently?
Well, you know, the thing with Marcel Plana is that, important thing is that we have to keep the old vines. We have vines which are already 40 years, right? And, well, at least 30-40% already died, you know, which is normal. But now we have to be very careful not to blend the new vines into the final assemblage, right? So Marcel Plana has to be made with the old vines, right? And then, of course, we depend on the year, you know. Some years it's easier, some years it's not so easy. I remember 1962, it was impossible. Maybe you remember the Pinatubo volcanic eruption in Philippines.
Yes.
That made temperature to decrease by 1 degree or more, the whole world. And the grapes didn't mature, you know. And by the time they mature, we got botrytis, you know. And we couldn't make Marcel Plana this year. We made Gran Coronel, so.
Yeah. So that's but if you see, if you find old vintage of Marcel Plana, I have few from around 2000, but earlier there are not so many left. But there are sellers who have Marcel Plana in Norway.
Yes,
of course. But 2018 vintage of Marcel Plana, could you tell me a little bit about what could you expect from this wine, from the taste profile?
Okay, well, I think, when we release this vintage, you know, it's already 5 years of age. The wine is perfectly, you know, drinkable, showing his best. But this wine could be stored probably for 20 years, at least. We don't make Marcel Plana today with as much tannic structure as we used to some years ago. Now we maybe, you know, the maceration with the skin is a bit shorter. Of course, we don't put any of the La Gafle, I forgot the English name for that. The wooden part of the grape.
Okay.
But
the stem, yeah.
The stems, right. So that's why the wine cannot age maybe 30 or 40, but 20 years, I think, is possible.
But Marcel Plana have today their own winery, at the winery, or next to it. So it's a beautiful place to visit. And we can't stop this podcast without talking about the visitors from Norway, because there have been many of the throughout the years, and the new facility at Marcel Plana is just is you have to go there if you and I know that many Norwegian are coming and coming back after the pandemic. You're building new restaurants inside, who is very nice, but I know that you have a vineyard who called Norway no. You have a wine?
Oh, yes. There is vineyard in Norway.
Yes.
There
yeah.
it is. It
yeah.
is there.
Yeah. What is the story about this? This.
Well, you know, in the old days, the dealing or the relation with monopolies was different. And it was normal that, you know, every country, Scandinavian country, had a vineyard dedicated to that country. And we have from Norway, we had Finland, we had Sweden. Yes, yes.
Hmm. So in Spain, in your vineyards, it's a vineyards who's called Norway. Oh, yeah.
To Norway, yeah, separated. Yes. Yeah, 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 yes, yes.
That's a small secret, you know, when you're following Taurus a lot, you know the secrets of Taurus in behind, even if not so many secrets left. But this talk has been very good. We will follow up with the article to tell you a little bit more about the fantastic new way Taurus is going ahead. And again, thank you for the visit, the 81 visit in Norway. And I hope to see you soon. And I will.
Anyway, yes, thank you will.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ukens vindtips med Svein en Finansavisen podcast. Programleder Svein Lindin. Produsent Lars Brenden Skram. Og podcast- og videoansvarlig Marius Mørk Larsen. Ansvarlig redaktør Trygve Hegnar.